What is up, guys? Welcome back to the Zach and Pat Show. I'm Zach.
I'm Pat.
This is the show about manhood, fatherhood, entrepreneurship, and the mentality it takes to be successful at those things. And we'll probably sprinkle in some helpful real estate advice, too, because that's what Pat and I do. You know, guys, life can be tough. You can go through some things and struggle at times, but this is the show to let you know that you're not alone. So if you're someone out there going through any of these things, this is the show for you. Let's get some housekeeping out of the way before we announce our awesome guest. Big thanks to our friends at NeuroGum for keeping us energized and focused. NeuroGum is a chewing gum. They've also got some mints, but it's got nootropics and caffeine in there. About 40 milligrams of caffeine per piece, L-theanine, vitamins B12 and B6. Helps with energy, focus, memory recall. I like to chew it whenever I'm, really all the time. Whenever I'm working out, whenever I'm driving around showing houses, whenever I just kind of need a little pick-me-up, but I'm trying to not reach for a full energy drink or another cup of coffee. Just a little pick-me-up, and I'm ready to go. So get out there, try some NeuroGum.
Also, shout out to our people over at Fit Flavors. So we only got a few days left. But till the end of May, with the promo code podcast50, you get 50% off a one-time gift card, online gift card. I went on, I bought a $1,000 gift card for $500, lasted me about 2 months. And it's great. So if you're looking as a gift for people or for yourself, it's a great thing. My birthday was just a couple weeks ago. So if you want to get me a gift card, cool. If not, no biggie. But you have a couple days left on that. It's great. I mean, I'm always on the go, run, and it makes it easy for tracking meals and staying on my diet and making sure that I'm hitting all those macros, and the food's delicious, and it takes a minute 30 to pop in the microwave, and you're on the go, you're good to go, and I'm excited for their new menu coming out.
Yeah, man.
Starting June.
We're getting, next week, I think it starts coming out?
Next week, yep.
So, yeah, I'm pumped. Yeah, can't wait. All right, now to introduce our guest for today. You may recognize him from his awesome trick shot videos on social media. He is a customer service manager at First Form, the great and powerful Dino Music.
Thank you, guys.
Welcome.
Yeah. Thanks for coming on.
Yeah, bro.
Happy to have you.
I was going
to
say, this is phenomenal, by the way. I didn't know what to expect. I've listened to two of your guys' podcasts. Mm. The last one was the one you actually started jiu-jitsu.
Okay.
Sick.
Yeah. I like what I'm seeing, just okay. So you guys know. So I appreciate you guys having me. I'm excited.
Yeah, dude. Well, let's tell the listeners a little bit about yourself.
I love this question, and I was actually thinking about this. I'm like, I'm sure they're going to ask
that's
me.
It's usually like the first one I always start off with, just because, let's introduce yourself.
Yeah, it opens the door, too.
Yeah, for sure.
So actually, great question. So I'm a refugee to this. Born a refugee, immigrated to America when I was 5 years old. Started playing soccer when I was 14.
Where are you from?
Bosnia.
Okay.
So my family, and I don't know if you guys kind of know, there was a little war.
Yeah.
Okay, that happened. And it, from 1992, 1995, and my parents went through all that. So seeing all that, kind of losing their home, losing a lot of their family, they just kind of made the move to come over here. So this is what got me to this place.
That's why I'm here. That's crazy.
A little bit more about me. Let's see. So obviously work at First Form. Soccer, huge part of my life. Right, trick shots. That's what I'm trying to do as a full time career. Hopefully, so we'll see how that goes.
Dude, that'd be sick.
Yeah, dude, that'd be fucking awesome.
Even
right?
Sal will watch them.
Yeah. Hey, even the haters, I'll make them fans. Yeah, man. Trick shots. Big into the mindset space, visualization, that kind of stuff. Because really, personal development changed my life early on, and it's helped me propel just who I am as a person. You know, from a relationship standpoint, family standpoint. And just overall life. So that's kind of the biggest thing about me that I honestly love is just the fact that I kind of dove into the personal development side really early from all those different areas of my life. So I hope that kind of sums up a little bit about me and gives you guys a little bit something.
Definitely.
Well, we're glad to have you here. Dino's a past client of mine.
Yep.
Connected with him a few years ago. And I'll say, I don't think I've ever met anybody that's more just happy. Seriously, you're always positive. I don't think I've ever, and when you're not not happy or positive, which is awesome because it just radiates and everybody feels it. So, no, we're excited to have you. Talk to us a little bit about you know coming over to America and some of that culture that you left behind, but you brought with you. I mean, for people that don't know, St. Louis is probably got the second largest population of Bosnians outside of Bosnia.
Yep. You're spot on.
And, I was married to a Bosnian, I've got my two boys and with her and, being immersed in that culture your guys' culture is about respect and hard work. And you're some of the nice, like just some of the nicest people I've ever met. And just talk to us about that.
I appreciate that. First of all, honestly, Pat, I think you're too kind. I try to be as positive as I can. I think it's more of a choice than anything.
Right.
That's the biggest thing. But as far as the culture goes, dude, it's honestly, and I'm still kind of getting used to it because, you know, growing up and, you know, still like I live with my mom, and my dad, we actually bought a house together.
Yeah.
Right. So moved them all in, and that culture is still very strong for us. Mm-hmm. And what I mean by like, I'm still getting used to it. You know, it's like even being in America, you're still kind of learning about the different people, different cultures, the way people act, because it's kind of different than, you know, where I came from. And to your point, like respect, cleanliness is a big one, discipline, you know, hard work, effort, and feelings. Like there's no feelings, right?
Right.
Like we very much so operate on like, hey, what is the right thing to do? What do you got to do? Now there's also good and bad, right? With everyone. But I think for me, the biggest thing culturally that we carried over still to this day is family. And it's the piece that you, the only thing that you'll ever have is family right now. Obviously, you know, family's not always good too, but the piece is, you know, having people in your corner at all times and being there regardless of if it's easy for you or not, right? From a convenience standpoint. And I think for me, that was the biggest thing that I learned is just the relationship building aspect. Because my family's always been big on doing the right thing because it's kind of like the law of the world. And I always tell people this too, but like my family's a little different in the sense of we're a little bit more modernized. And what I mean by modernized is not that like the values are gone, but just my parents' thinking is a little bit more open-minded, right? Where it's like when you go into the Bosnian culture, a lot of it is very closed-minded. It's, you know, our ways, it's been like this for a while. This is how it's kind of have to be run, right? You know, marry into the same culture, that kind of deal. Obviously, moving in America, that's changing as it goes. And some people still kind of follow that. So that was always the biggest thing that I think for a lot of people still stays the same. But where my family was different was they had that open-mindedness about just life, right? And one of the things they always taught me was be nice, do the right thing, care for other people, and just let the world take care of the rest. And honestly, bro, that's changed my entire life. You know, and I kind of hope that answers a little bit of your question because that was like the biggest piece for me. There are obviously little things like, you know, like the funny part is shoes in the house.
Oh, yeah.
Like no shoes in the
no
house.
No shoes in the house.
Yeah. Dude, I would get, oh my God, we won't even go down that route, but you never have shoes in the house.
I still a rule at my house, even though we're divorced. That's, that's still a rule at the house.
That's something stuck
I
around.
That. Yeah. I love that. Pat's like, yeah, you know what? I don't have to clean up the floor. So I was like, I like that. Yeah. Let's keep that. Yeah,
no, I still do. I've got a 4 and 5 year old. There's all the floors are always going to be clean. But, you know, Melissa would always talk about why there's no shoes in the house. Mm-hmm. And it makes total sense.
1000%. I mean, dude, you're tracking in dirt.
Yeah.
From I mean, it makes sense. I just, you know, lazy white people, I guess.
No comment. No, I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. But yeah, man, I hope that kind of answers you guys' question with that. You know, I think from a cultural standpoint, just family love and passion, compassion for other people has always been the thing that's carried over from when we were in Bosnia to where we're at now. You know, and that's kind of been the thing that for me is always the biggest piece. In community, right? Like at the end of the day,
it's insane the support that you guys have for each other. Because I remember it's a couple of years ago. Well, so did you go to Melville?
Yeah.
Yep. So Melville. So a lot of Bosnians moved into like South St. Louis in the South County area, and Melville was the school that most went to. Well, Melissa found out that they were about $13,000 behind in meals, like what people were paying for in terms of meals. So she, you know, together, she talked to me about this. And this is actually while we were going through the divorce. Divorce wasn't even finalized yet. And she's like, hey, you know, we're talking because of assets. And she's like, I want to make sure that we're donating this much money to this, but I'm going to do a fundraiser for this. And at the end of it, this is how much I'm going to donate to it. Are you okay with it? I'm like, double it. We're good. I'll match.
That's awesome.
And I think we ended up raising like $16,000 or $17,000.
Awesome.
And if you go back and look at the donations, I'd say probably 95% of it came from the Bosnian community.
That's amazing. Awesome.
And so we were able to pay off the debt and then some for meals moving forward for people. But again, it was the Bosnian community that stepped up, and I was like, it's crazy the community aspect that you guys have, and I mean, because now you're starting to see a shift out of that South City, South County area, moving a little bit more further south. And it's like once one moves, the whole community starts shifting that way. So now it's like, it's just, it's all kind of migrated further south from South City and South County, even a little further south. So it's just really cool. I mean, Thanksgiving. Oh my gosh. Thanksgiving is a huge holiday for Bosnians.
Really?
Yeah.
That's yeah. Cool. It's actually surprising. So I think the reason is just because of the food.
Right.
Like, oh, we love food.
Oh, gosh. Okay. Oh my gosh. So the first one I went to, they had a traditional Thanksgiving dinner.
Like
a, and then
like
they
traditional like American turkey, mashed potatoes. Yep.
And then they had a Bosnian style Thanksgiving, which was like lamb.
Yep.
They put through a lamb on a spit.
On a spigot.
Like, yeah. And I'm like, I show up and they're like, I hope you're hungry. I'm like, well, I just came from my family's and like, yeah. Well, no, we've got food. You got to eat. I'm like,
yeah, you're a big guy. I know you can eat.
I was like, oh shit. Give me some rakia.
And
let's go.
Yeah.
Past cultured.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Rakia is their moonshine.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
It's made out of like plums or pears. Yep. Actually, it was funny. I was just in Iowa and at my girlfriend's family's house and across the street is a Bosnian guy.
Yep.
And awesome. Hung out with him the whole time. And he's chatting to my kids in Bosnian. And they're like, I'm so excited. I can finally speak Bosnian to somebody. I'm like, yeah, they get it. They understand it.
Oh, really? I didn't know your kids spoke Bosnian.
That's
Sweet. They don't speak it, but they can understand it. They're still working on English. So yeah,
let's start there.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah. I was going to say, they're 4 and 5.
Yeah. So they're still working on English. So they're like, they're having a hard time with English, but they can understand Bosnian. They can say some words. Like every night when we go to say goodbye, they'll say, good night, Dad. Laka noć.
Love that.
Yeah.
I love that.
So,
what does that mean? Good night.
Good
night. Love you.
Laka noć is good night.
Laka noć.
It's like lucky night is essentially like the translation of
okay.
it.
Okay.
Yeah. And then like, it's not grandma and grandpa. It's Micah and Dito.
Okay.
And then you got cousins and all that, which is Dija and
Strina.
Yep. I mean, they're learning it. And they can say basic words, but they can't string together sentences yet, but they're working on it. I mean, her parents will only speak Bosnian to them, which I love.
That's awesome.
When I was there and I would go over to them, all they did was speak Bosnian. And as an older person, I'm like, come on, guys.
Come on, give me something. I'm probably not going to pick it up.
I need you guys to translate this for me. But yeah, so, again, just the whole culture, the family, the community around the Bosnian community is awesome. But I got drunk on rakia this weekend. Yeah,
I was about to say, I was like, let Pat just educate everyone.
No, it's all you.
Well, yeah, I mean, you're married to one. You're married to a Bosnian. Yeah, that's.
I'm tied to her for the rest of my life.
Yeah, for sure. Yep. Dude, it's so cool that you guys are like, you know, I love when people, you know, pass culture onto their kids, you
me
know,
too.
Cause that's, you know, especially, you know, being from, you know, them being half Bosnian, it's just, I just think that's so cool. Like, I mean, I'm sure you're going to pass on, you know, maybe I'm assuming you can speak full, you know, like I'm sure when you have kids, you'd love for them to learn the culture, you know, like
1000%.
I feel like that's so important.
Dude, especially for a kid to learn it at that age. It does something to their brain and it gets them to understand a lot more of like, essentially you're getting two lives. In a way, right? Because you're experiencing, you know, one culture, but then another at the same time. And you leave it up to your interpretation of like, hey, I like this, but I don't like this. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the beauty of it.
Oh, absolutely.
And it's so cool that you guys work together the way you do.
I appreciate it. Right?
Like, for real, man. Like, I think that's a big piece. And I kind of want to tie that to with the community aspect, right? It's like a soccer. If you ever watch like a soccer game, like those fans are the craziest.
Oh, absolutely.
And they'll do whatever for the team. I would relate the Bosnian community very similar. And I think with that too, it's like having that type of community, but having that type of, you know, understanding of people, you want to do whatever it takes to make your team win. Right. But that's the thing. It's like, I think a lot of days now you see, it's kind of like the family is a team and it's not like, hey, we're a team. You know, it's like, hey, Zach's got his own family. That's his team. Pat's got his family, his team, my team, your team. It's not like, hey, how do all of our teams work together? Yeah. And I think that's what the Bosnian community does really well. You know, from that standpoint, it's like, how do we help each other out?
And now, was that how it was back in Bosnia, or do you think that came about with everybody moving here and have everybody gone through what they went through? I mean, it wasn't just a war. I mean, it was a genocide
for sure. Yeah,
and I think that's what a lot of people don't understand about what was going on. And do you think that might have played into it, or at least strengthened that, or was that how it was from the very beginning?
That's actually a good point. I would consider both.
Okay,
you know, I think. Early on, and this is something my parents used to tell me all the time, like back in the day when I was growing up, they would leave the house unlocked all the time. Mm-hmm. Like our neighbors can come in whenever. So I think it carried over, but I do think the genocide just really sparked like, hey, you can lose this like that.
Like that. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think what coming over, it's kind of like you only have your people.
Right.
You know, mm-hmm. like, especially because, and I always, whenever I talk about my story, like when my parents came here, it's like, dude, $50 in their pocket. There's no Google. There's no internet. There's no like, hey, here, open up maps and figure out what to do, where to go. It's like, you have to figure out everything on your own. But when you have someone who's experienced what you've experienced, and then you know they're kind of going through the same thing, it's like, okay, cool. Let's
tighten this. Yeah, we're all together in this. Yeah.
Yep.
Let's figure it out.
It's like even like with you guys, what you guys are doing, right? With this show, with you guys are both in the same field, but it's easy for you guys to be like, hey, we're battling. Mm-hmm. But that's not what I see. And essentially, it's like, hey, you're going through the same struggles that I'm going to go through and vice versa. Right. So when you have that person with you, especially if it's a group of people, I think it just tightens that bond because you know what someone's gone through. Right. You know, I know kind of before we were even getting into the podcast, Murph was talking about just understanding people or understanding why something happens or why they do what they do. And I think a lot of that has brought the community together. Right. Because when you see all that and you know what the person's experienced or, you know, other people in the same culture, you know, life of experience, you're like, okay, these people get me. These people can help me through this. And that is my group. So I think it's kind of that way. You know, it's like going to a CrossFit gym.
Yeah.
You know, those guys are like fucking cult leaders. You know
what I mean?
Like,
we are.
People love it, you know? But, and I think it's awesome because it's like at the end of the day, Zach, if someone called you from your CrossFit gym, would you go out and help them?
Fuck yeah.
Immediately.
Right.
That's what I think it is, you know? And it's just that bond through the struggle in a way.
Yeah, 100%. Right? There's something to that. It's the, like, you become close with people you struggle with. I felt that. I felt that in my jiu-jitsu journey. I felt that in my CrossFit journey. I felt it with my fraternity brothers. Mm. You know, like all the hard shit that we had to do, like to get in the fraternity for a whole semester. Like, sounds stupid now, but like we had to do some stupid shit. And like, well, I'm still like, when me and my buddies get together from college, we still talk about, you know, all the dumb, ridiculous things we had to do to like join the fraternity. You know, it sounds ridiculous, but like, I mean, I just think that there is something about going through struggle with someone that makes you closer.
Just think about how better our entire country would be if everyone took that mentality.
Mm. I agree.
Yeah,
you know, I agree. You know, there's a lot to be learned, and 100%. And I think the Bosnian community is a good representation of how things could be and should be done.
Now, I feel like someone's told me this before, but I can't remember why. But now, why is St. Louis like the spot that all the Bosnians came to?
That's a good question. So I think, and I don't know the exact details of this, but St. Louis was one of the only states that opened up the door. And they were like, hey, we see what's going on. Like, we love you guys. Like, we have an open door here. Right. Come in.
Come on in.
And essentially it was like, hey, you know, we see that the city population or the city wasn't growing as fast. And it's like, hey, we can bring these people in. They can kind of revitalize it. And essentially that's what happened.
And St. Louis has always had a really big concentration of European immigrants as well. The Hill was not always just like uniquely Italian. I mean, because we have, like we've talked about, we have Dogtown. Mm. We have
all these. That's like a melting pot here.
Yeah.
We have all these cool little, every little neighborhood has their, you know, Dutch town.
Yeah, I always tell people when they come to visit, I was like, you guys got to come for like at least, you know, 7 to 10 days so you can really experience St. Louis, because like you could hit up so many different countries within a little, you know, each day you could spend a day in each spot and have an amazing time.
Yeah.
And so
I did that with my business partner. His name's Dino too, actually. Me and him invested in real estate together, and he's from California, and he came here for the first time last summer, and I like had to like drive him around. I was like, all right, now we're in the Hill. Look at the fire hydrants. They're painted like the Italian flag. And like, you know, he just thought it was so cool because he's from Sacramento, and they don't have anything like that out there.
Yeah.
You know, and he just thought it was, man, it's so cool. Like, I wish I had more time. You know, we only went to a couple restaurants, but yeah, I would I definitely think that's a good recommendation on, you know, spend a couple days here. You can really, you know, kind of see the whole city, see all the like the different things we have to offer, because there's a lot more to it, you know, than just the arch.
I think you just lose sight of that. You know what I mean?
Right.
It's like, because you live here, so it's like, ah, man, it's not that cool. It's, you know, there's not that many things to do, but in reality, there's so much.
Yeah.
There's so much.
I think, because I remember as a kid, through getting ready to leave for college, like I could not wait to get out of St. Louis, just because I think from the younger standpoint, like I just, there's not quite like, you don't realize or recognize what's available. But then as you come back, it's like everybody comes back to St. Louis and you leave. And then all of a sudden you're like, I need to get back. And once you're back, that's when I really took a, really deep look into St. Louis and everything that it had to offer. And I'm like, man, St. Louis is pretty great, you know, and it's an underrated city. And, you know, because of how it's set up, you've got St. Louis City, St. Louis County, You know, we're looked at as a small city, but we're really not. You know, we're huge with how spread out it is. But, you know, I just feel like St. Louis gets overlooked a lot.
Absolutely.
And there's so much here to offer and so many cool things that you can do. But back to what we were asking, yeah. I mean, you know, the conversations that I've had is it's almost like, well, one, there was that open door policy, but mm-hmm. like, so you had New York, St. Louis, Chicago. And so they kind of got split, but it was like, if the majority, you know, a handful came here and then the next were like, well, again,
I want to join my friends
community. Exactly. Yeah. I want to go where there's going to be people that I know. Mm-hmm. So it was like, all right, well, we got our initial five and then five became 10 yep. and 10 became 20, 40. And the next thing yeah. you know, it just grew. Well, I, you know, just like I was saying back in Iowa, I just found out, I mean, he was telling me, he's like, yeah, we've got a huge, he's like, there's probably like 10 to 15,000 Bosnians here yep. in that small town that they were in Johnson, mm-hmm. Iowa, which is
crazy.
just south of Des Moines. And yeah, I mean, he was just, we talked about that all weekend. So,
but, and there is I was going to say there is a pretty big Bosnian population in Des Moines, especially. Yeah. I have a lot of family there. So there was a fun fact. I actually, to your point about moving and coming back. So we actually moved when I was in like sixth, seventh grade to Iowa for okay. like 6 months. Mm. 6 months, we're right back.
Yeah.
Right. But when we were over there, there was a large population. And I don't know why. Like, I really don't. It could be because it's kind of close to St. Louis at the same time.
Right.
But definitely, Iowa's one of those. New York's one of those. Michigan's one of those. But I think, to your point, I think you are right with, like, hey, it started with just a handful, and then the community kind of just built because it is like, hey, my friends are here. I'm going to go here.
Actually, maybe I have a theory about that. Okay, so you said you and your whole family still live together, correct?
Yes.
How many people live in your household?
One, two, three. We have six.
In most of those places, those are more red state areas where housing is cheaper, correct?
Mm-hmm.
You probably buy more single family homes or even multifamily units, and that's probably where they go there. I mean, it's probably hard to have such a big family unit and try to go to New York City because mm-hmm. I have, Ari, my Albanian friend who was on Andy's podcast years ago.
Yep, yep.
He's like, my whole family, like, there's a whole Albanian neighborhood because, like, we try to live together, but we can't because there's not enough space. So maybe in a place like Des Moines, Iowa, you're able to buy more single family homes.
I think that actually makes a lot of sense.
Well, yeah, I mean, look at Chicago, New York, St. Louis. Where's the cheap? I mean, St. Louis is by far the cheapest cost of living.
Mm-hmm. Without a doubt.
That makes sense for sure.
Yeah. It worked out.
Yeah,
worked
absolutely. Out.
That's
for sure.
Sure,
yeah. Yeah, we're happy to have you guys. You know?
Hopefully we're doing good things.
Yeah, it's great.
You have your good and bad like everyone else, you know, but that's just how it goes.
Well, I mean, and we talk about entrepreneurship all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Bosnian community might be one of the biggest, have the most entrepreneurial spirit out of anybody.
Best contractors in my phone are Bosnian.
Yeah. I love that. It's like every time I get a referral from Melissa, or, you know, and I call them and it's like, you know, owner operator truck drivers, or they own a trucking company, or they're contractors and they own a contracting company, something like that, you know. And the guy that I met this weekend owns a trucking company.
Not surprised.
Right. And he told me, I was like, oh, you know, what do you do? He goes, mm-hmm. oh, I own a trucking company. I'm like, get it.
Yeah.
Yep. Totally checks out.
Understood. Yep. Yep. Know exactly about everything about that. So, but yeah, I mean, just that entrepreneurial spirit. I mean, is that how the culture, I mean, is that what it's like back in Bosnia? Is it more?
Good question. I think it's because things were so limited in Bosnia. Like, even if you go now, work is not readily available, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you can't just get a job like you can here. And I think because of, you know, moving into a place where it's like, hey, you can do whatever the hell you want.
Yeah.
It's like, are you kidding me? You know, it's like, oh, I'm good at this. I'm good at this. I'm good at this. I can start my own business. It's not that big of a barrier to entry. I'm in, you know? And I think that's why you see that a lot. And especially in Bosnia, handiwork, right? We have farms. It's more of that kind of stuff. And I think when you transfer over to, you know, coming over here, that's where the truck drivers come in, especially
truck driving wise. I mean, I understand the contracting side of things because you're a lot of farms, a lot of that sort of stuff, and you're building things on your own. So that makes sense. But the truck driving wise, because I've seen pictures of your roads. I mean, there's not a lot of trucks driving around in there.
Not at all.
I'm guessing just driving heavy farm equipment and stuff like that. Yep. Is that kind of the correlation to that, or
I think there's two correlations.
Okay.
I think the first one, biggest piece is if you do see the roads, they're terrible.
Oh yeah.
So if you could learn how to drive there, you can drive fucking anywhere.
Oh yeah.
But second, and I think honestly, it's kind of funny because there's no real like skill or transfer. I think it's just because they didn't know English.
Okay.
You know, like that was a big reason.
You could just drive.
Yep. And it's like, hey,
put it in the GPS.
Yep. Yep. It's quick, right? Mm. It's like you might need maybe three sentences to know, right? Mm. When you pick up a load, drop off a load, who to call, right? Mm. And usually the person you're calling is Bosnian already.
Right.
And so I think that's where a lot of that shifted. And to your point too, you know, with a lot of the entrepreneurial side, I think there was a big push on the trucking entrepreneurial companies, you know, kind of Bosnian just starting their own. And because of that, again, community, it's like, oh, well, I don't need English that much. It's like, I could just do this, make a good amount of money. I could become an owner operator, do it on my own. And I think that's where the shift kind of happened on that side.
Yeah. And I didn't realize how much money there was in trucking until I got into this business. And my dad worked in logistics for years and was looking to start his, like when he retired from US Steel, he was thinking about starting his own logistics company. And yeah, I never really understood that side of it until I got into this and I'm start working with these owner operators. Right. And I'm like, holy shit, there is some damn good money to be made there. I mean, I don't know how it is now after COVID. I know that COVID really, really hit that industry hard. Mm-hmm. But I prior to COVID, I mean, it was insane seeing some of these tax returns. I'm like,
yeah, I'm in the wrong business.
Crazy.
I'm doing the wrong thing. I'm going to go do that.
I'm going to get my CDL or whatever.
Yeah. Right?
Dude, but the hardest part is like, I think about like, even with my dad, he's still a truck driver, but he spends, 200 plus days out of the year
on driving. The road.
Yeah. I'm like, dude, it's crazy. I mean, I think the biggest thing with COVID, I think it's still moving, and I don't know if COVID actually caused this. It could have happened a little bit earlier, but what started to happen was truckers were essentially like moving all the time without breaks. Cause it's like, hey, if I got a truck and I could drive for 16 hours, I'm going 16 hours faster, more money. And so they kind of put like the, hey, 8 hours a day
restrictions.
And I think that's kind of what played a role in it. But I don't know if COVID had too much of an impact out the gate. My dad continued to work. So that was the good part.
Right. Well, they were essential.
Yeah.
Obviously
big time.
Truck drivers make, I mean, if the deliveries and things that they're delivering, I mean, if it wasn't for them, we'd be screwed.
Oh, true.
Yeah.
True.
Absolutely screwed. I mean, how do we think we get our groceries and shit?
No, it just drops.
Yeah.
No, just click a button.
We just go to Fit Flavors, right?
Yeah. Stork. Yeah. 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 Just go to Fit Flavors. They had to make that food, though. Yeah.
Promo code podcast50.
I'm about to buy some Fit Flavors.
Yeah. Well, obviously, you went a different route. And so, talk to us about that. So it started with soccer and you wound up going and playing college soccer, correct?
Yep.
Talk to us about soccer and your soccer career and how that led you to where you're at today.
I heard Lionel Messi asked you for advice one time.
Yeah, let's go with that. You're right. Off the record. I'm just kidding. Good question.
But okay.
Yeah, Ronaldo's actually the better choice. Yeah. So Pat got that right.
I don't watch soccer, bro.
Yeah.
That's fair. He is in America, so I'll give you that one. But dude, it's funny, man. I actually didn't start playing soccer until I was 14.
Okay. Oh, damn.
Yeah,
that's really late. Yeah.
Very late. I hated sports growing up, which is weird. And I think it was just because of like the culture shock in general. It's like when I got here, I've talked about this before with like, you know, I think Murph a long time ago, but early on when I got here, I had to be kind of self-aware because even in before we even got to America, we lived in refugee camps, you know, so I got to see different cultures in one room, different types of people, different type of things. And it was so brand new. And it's funny, man.
How old? Five?
I was 4 or 5. Yep. Okay. Around that time.
Sorry.
You're good.
I'm just trying to
understand. Yeah, bro. You can stop me at any time. But I was even telling my mom, like, dude, I can remember like the hospital I was born in. And I could remember things that like at 1 year old, 2 year old, 3 years old, like, and I don't know why. But at 5 years old, 4 years old, I really started to have like the self-awareness that I just didn't understand. And I was like, things are weird. Things are different. When I got to America, it was even bigger, right? Because I'm like, dude, I just lived in a refugee camp. We moved 100 different times and now I'm moving again. And then even when we got to America, it was constant moving. So it was trying to always understand what the hell was going on. So it was like soccer, sports, all that stuff. There was a lot of fear, right? So I was like, I don't want to go out and do these things. But then when I got into like 5th, 6th grade, I started to notice, you know, these kids playing sports. Oh, you know, my friend plays basketball. I was like, oh, that's interesting. I was like, I'm more into watching wrestling and, you know, playing games. So I was like, all right, nah, fuck that, right? Mm-hmm. But then my mind started to open up and I just started to pay attention. I was like, well, this guy seems a little bit happier, he seems to be cooler, right? And this guy is there, you know, he's not bad. But I was like, maybe I should figure something out. And then it was funny, I moved my last, very last time moving before college, it was in 8th grade, and we moved right at South County. It was like right next to Melville, essentially. Mm-hmm. And I started, you know, we had like, I lived in a condo, so there was a lot of kids around and they started playing soccer and they would call me and I was like, okay, I'll play. And I started playing soccer, started playing basketball. And I was like, man, this is kind of fun, you know? And then freshman year starts, I have a friend that I haven't seen in like 8 years, 10 years, something like that. It was a long time. And he just stops by and he's like, dude, what? And we say hi, you know, all that fun stuff, greeting, catching up. And he was like, dude, you should just join the team. I was like, ah, dude, I would love to. I was like, when's the tryouts? He's like, actually, we just had them yesterday, but you can ask the coach. And I was like, damn, dude, do I want to do that? And then something inside me was like, yeah, I'll just do it. And from that moment, literally that moment, I fell in love and continued to play. And that's been my life. And then, you know, obviously starting late when mm-hmm. I was 14, I played a lot. Like I would come home from school, practice, and then I would play till 9 or 10 with my friends every single day. And it was just from a passion standpoint. It wasn't like, I want to be a professional soccer player yet. It was just like, I love this so much that this is what I want to do. And then as my high school career kind of kept going on into college, I was like, what is my passion? And the only thing that I had was soccer. It was the thing that I was good at. It was the thing that I could do 24/7, no issues at all. I've even told people this where it's like my biggest challenges in life, I figured out by just juggling. Like I would go outside, juggle a ball, and it would put me at this like space where I could think clearer. I can focus on things that I want to instead of things that I don't want to. And it helped me solve a lot of problems. So I started to pay attention to that too. I was like, maybe there's something with this. So at like senior year, it was like, hey, I want to be a pro. I'm sending it. So getting into college, you know, my first year, it was a D3. I went to Webster. Did not know how to recruit. Didn't know how to any of that stuff goes. So it was very much so like, I'll just try it out. I came in with a class of 52 people for a college team. And now essentially that's three teams.
That's a lot.
Yeah. And it was a new coach. And essentially what he was trying to do is create like a very competitive atmosphere, right? Create two teams where it's like you're battling for spots. And I came in there without really any expectations. You know, my senior year, junior year, I played varsity. I had 2 goals, one assist. So it was nothing monumental. So going out there, I was like, okay, I'm just going to play my game. I'm not expecting to do anything amazing. And when I got out there, I started to play. I thought I did well. I didn't do anything phenomenal. But by the end of the tryouts, the coach was like, I like this kid. And from that point on, my freshman year, I started to play more often. I was one of 4 freshmen that played that entire year.
That's sick. Awesome.
Which was crazy for me.
Right.
Because I was like, dude, even on my, like when I was in varsity, I was on the bench. I never started, like never won game. You know, again, 4 years of soccer at that point, it wasn't a lot. I wasn't that good. So going into college, I wasn't expecting a lot. But during that summertime, I just trained my fucking ass off. Like I trained every single day, multiple times a day, not thinking anything of it. And what I didn't realize is when I got to the tryouts, I actually improved, mm-hmm. right? But you don't really see that. It's kind of like progress photos, right?
And you're doing it by yourself, especially like training by yourself. You know? And then when you get around people, you're like, oh shit, you know?
You're like, yeah, it's actually paying off. Yeah. And I mean, dude, with you and jiu-jitsu, I mean, you probably see that
bro,
all the time.
I always say the biggest jump I ever had was during COVID because I, you know, it was me and like, I was the low man on the totem pole training with like all these upper belts mm-hmm. in my buddy's basement 3 days a week when all the gyms were shut down. And so I just basically got my ass kicked for 4 straight months, you know, like 4 straight months, I would just go in and I was lucky to not get submitted every round, you know, like that's what I was just trying to do, just survive. But then when I actually went back to the gym and rolled with like people in my like level, weight, everything, I was like, oh my God, these guys feel like nothing compared to these, you know, purple and brown belts I've been rolling with. And, you know, and then pretty quickly after that, you know, I saw a huge jump in my game from there. So, but I can totally relate.
Yeah. And it is crazy how it happens because it's like, until you go out and play, you don't know. Right. And
right.
Because the people that you're rolling with, they're good,
yeah.
You know, so you don't really see that progression. Right. And that's kind of what happened with me too, right? I didn't really notice that I was improving, but until I got into college, I was like, oh shit, I'm actually making some strides here. So obviously got into college, you know, played a lot during my freshman year. And then at the end of my freshman year, I was like, you know what? If I want to do this, I got to go now, right? Because I'm like, I'm 19, time is not fucking slowing down. Mm-hmm. So I was like, you know what can I do? So I went out into Austria. So I have some family that lives out in Austria and I went out there just no like contact with any teams at the time. The plan was just to go out there and just see what I could do. And in the meantime, I ended up having 2 teams where I got to play, try out with both of them. One team kept me and they wanted to keep me like there for a long time. The other team was kind of like, hey, you could be on the practice squad until we get you fit enough to get into the playing or whatever. Luckily I had some connections. So that helped out a little bit too. But the hardest part was the visa. And at the time it wasn't like I was, you know, level 1, league 1, it was like league 3, right? So very low pro level, but still got to play, right? But the visa part was, that was the part that actually got me to come back, because it was like $8,000. It was a lot of crazy stuff that we didn't even know what happened. So in my mind was like, hey, I do want to play soccer, but I also want to finish my school. Because one thing my parents were big on was like, hey, no backup plan, but if you break your leg, what the fuck do you do? Right. So I was like, okay, if I have my knowledge, I have my education, I'm always ready. So that was kind of my big thing. I was like, yeah, I want to play soccer, but I also want to get this done. And in Austria, if you get like a work visa, I can't get a school visa.
Oh, really?
And if I get a school visa, I can't get a work visa, because then I'm playing and it's not for school. So weird shit. I still don't get it. So anyway, I came back. And from coming back, that was really when it hit me, where I was like, hey.
So how long were you in Austria?
I was there for about 6 months. Okay. I played for 4.
Okay.
So I came back, essentially, I was still 19 at the time. It was, I was just about to turn 20. Okay. But I went out there at the beginning of 19. So like January-ish timeframe. Came back by like October, not October, it was like August. So when I came back, you know, I got back into college, right? Webster. You know, I was like, hey, I'm just going to continue school again. But in my mind, I was like, hey, if I want this bad enough, I got a little bit of a taste. I know what I need to do to get there. So what I started to do was continue my practice. But this time I took it to like the Kobe mentality of like, hey, you know, if I have 4 practices a day, 5 days out of the week compared to someone who has 2, obviously, you know, elevate it, right? Mm-hmm. So I took that approach, and I trained 3 times a day, every single day on top of school. And that was my mindset. I was like, dude, I'm going for this. In the meantime, I was looking at like, okay, if I want to be the best player in the world, I have to look at the best players in the world. What's different? You know, like, hey, everyone practices, but what is the one thing that's different about them? And all the research that I did was mindset. It was visualization. It was being calm under pressure. It was all these different things, goal setting. And that was very new, right? Because I was like, I've heard these things, but never dove into it the amount that I did. And when I started to do that, it was funny. I actually came across a page called Athlete Mindset. And the cool part is, I'm at Athlete Mentality, and I'm still friends with this guy to this day. And I'll kind of tell you guys a story. But it was, he had a regular, literally Instagram page. It was like 2,000 followers, and he was selling this ebook. And it was essentially like the game plan for mindset. It was an athlete mindset book where it tells you like step by step what you need to do to, you know, set goals, visualize all this stuff. And it was like $50. I was like, dude, 2,000 followers, $50. I was like, I don't know if I'm gonna do that. I was like, bro, this guy might skeet me. You know, I don't know what's gonna happen. Right. So my fiance now ends up buying me that book for my birthday. And I was like, shit, dude, I have to do it. Right.
Right.
So I was like, you know what? I'm gonna give it a month. I'm gonna give this book a month. So I opened the book and I'm scrolling through it, and I'm like, some of these points are really interesting because it matched exactly what I was reading about some of the top level players. And I was like, you know what? I'll give it a shot for a month. I was like, a true, not a college try, right? Yeah. Like an actual try. Sure. So I was like, you know what? I'm gonna give this a month. So I gave it a month, and I started to notice things that I didn't even know I was possible at the time. And within that month, I always tell people this, I saw the biggest growth in that month compared to the years of soccer that I actually practiced. And it was just because I started to visualize every single day, meditate every single day, write down my goals, journal my thoughts, like all these different things. And this was all in that book. And it was so mind-blowing to me because, dude, I still do that to this day. And it's been the difference of my entire life. But for soccer, and one of the biggest things for me that I think soccer impacted my life was that moment, right? Was learning about the mindset piece, learning about the law of attraction, learning about these different things that you don't hear too often,
right?
It's like, dude, when's the last time we've heard in school the law of attraction, or learning about, hey, writing your goals or meditation, any of these
things?
Never. So when I got that and I started to test it out, dude, I was like, the first month was so phenomenal that I was like, I'm gonna give it another month. Second month, I was like, holy shit, dude, I feel different. I was like, what if I doubled down? So I started meditating and visualizing 30 minutes in the morning, 30 minutes at night. Like, I was going hardcore on it. And then within that first month or second month, there was a semi-pro team that popped up here, Maritza. I don't know if they actually still play anymore. It's been a while. But there was a semi-pro team that popped up out of nowhere. And I was like, ah, maybe that's a calling.
Is that the team that put out in Fenton?
Yeah. They played out in Fenton.
St. Louis Soccer Club?
Or? St. Louis Lillian?
No, that was the Lulugans were their like fan base.
Oh,
you talking about the Lions?
No, they played out at Fenton Park.
I know what you're talking about.
They were green and blue, like Scott Gallagher colors and stuff like that.
AC St. Louis, right?
Something like that.
I think it might have been AC St. Louis. So not that, but it was in a very similar league.
Gotcha.
And it was a much newer team, like 2019, something like that, 2018, like brand new. Actually, no, I'm lying. That was 2017, because that's when I started playing with them. But yeah, it was so brand new team came out. I went to the tryout and I was like, you know what? I'm gonna send this. And at the tryout, it was like D1 players, professional players, ambush players. So I was like, oh shit, this is untapped territory for me. You know, so I gave him my all, whatever. And I made the team, but I was on the chopping block. So I was like, okay, cool. Right. Like I was like, I gotta earn my spot. I gotta fucking fight for this. I'm gonna do it. And I continue to do the visualization piece. I continue to do all these things. And then 2 months from starting that team, I ended up legitimately playing a full entire game, like literally the full length game where we played for the US Open Championship tournament. Like we were going into to essentially fight for our spot to be in the USA Cup. Mm-hmm. Right. And I played that full game and went from a guy who was literally on the chopping block mm-hmm. to playing that full game and playing multiple full games and being a starter and doing all these things. And I remember the coach had a conversation with me and he was like, dude, I'll be honest. He's like, we were this close to letting you go. He's like, I don't know what the fuck you did, but we don't like keep doing what you're doing. He's like, this doesn't even make sense to us. Like your play, everything, it's different. And that's where that piece, like soccer and visualization, that was a life-changing piece for me. You know, soccer in general has taught me a lot about team sports, right? Being a teammate, learning how to handle criticism, learning how to approach other people when they're not doing their shit. So it teaches you so much. But one of the biggest pieces for me was that mindset piece, truthfully, in soccer. So yeah, dude, that changed my life overall.
That's awesome.
Yeah, that's really cool.
I had one of those mindset moments with baseball. When I was in eighth grade, I got similar, but there's a book specifically about the mental game of baseball. It's actually what it's called.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
And I started reading that in eighth grade. Was the first time I read it, but I've read it every year since then. Just because there's so much in there that you can relate to everyday life.
Absolutely.
And it's all about the mental side of things and having that mental toughness and that mental control. And again, the visualization, I'm not sure how the visualization stuff with you, but like, I remember like, and I'll do it from time to time where it's like, hey, you're going to like juggle baseballs. Mm-hmm. One of them's going to be Cardinals red. One's going to be Royal blue. And the other one's going to be Athletic green. And you're just sitting there visualizing yourself, feeling the weight in your hands, like all this stuff. And it's amazing the focus that you can get from that. And as well as like just learning from there, expanding onto that and how you can train your mind to like visualize what you want and what you want to see from mm-hmm. it. And we've talked about it all the time on this about
yeah.
how visualization and putting it out there into the world and making it happen. So mm-hmm. yeah, no, that same thing. I think it's just the athletes in general and
yep.
that it takes. And once you realize that mental side of it, it opens up a whole new world of stuff. I mean, my game went, it was just leaps and bounds ahead of everyone else,
yep.
especially at that young age. And then once you get in the pro ball, like everybody's doing that shit.
Yeah.
Now it's like, again, like you said, how do you stand out? Because once you get to pro, at a pro level, pretty much everyone's skill sets are very equal.
Absolutely.
I always tell people like, well, what's the difference between, well, once you get to double A, you're as good as, you're good enough to play in the big leagues. But like, what's the difference? I'm like, the mindset. Like those guys know how to handle all that yes. versus the younger guys don't. So.
Oh, 100%. But
it's insane. Oh, just mentally, just it changes everything. It just Absolutely. Changes everything. Oh, no matter what you're doing.
I mean,
sports or work, whatever.
Or everything. I can relate that to like what I do is I've seen, you know, there's a lot of people that are like absolute monsters in the gym. Mm-hmm. You know, like they fuck everybody up. But then when, you know, competition comes, like, you know, they might I don't want to say they choke, but they're not as good as they are in the gym.
100%.
You know, and it's just like it's always this weird thing, and it's just like. But then they're the very opposite thing can happen too. Like there's mm-hmm. the guy that, you know, I'm not going to say he's like lazy or just isn't, you know, there mentally in the gym, but like all of a sudden when that competition bell goes off, like you just see another side of him mm-hmm. you've never seen before.
It's like a different person.
Yeah. And it's so crazy to see. It's just some people, just the differences in some people like that.
Oh, absolutely.
You know? And it's a perfect tie into like the mindset piece, right? Because even those guys that don't have to try that hard, but when it comes competition, they're like, fucking on. They're ready. They're good. And it's like, how do you do that?
They perform under pressure. Like they rise to that, you know, something with the people watching mm-hmm. or whatever it is. I don't know. And just it's so crazy to see, you know.
Well, and so now with that mentality side of thing, how have you transitioned out of soccer mm-hmm. into everyday life and what you're doing and working at First Form and things like that? So how has that played into what you're doing now?
I love that. So the biggest piece for me with obviously managing a team, learning how people operate, that was a big piece that soccer helped out with, mm. right? And I've got to be a captain of a team, but it's way different when you're a captain compared to like actual leading a group of people in a business world, like way different.
Yeah.
But the piece there is still the care and like the accountability piece and being able to talk to people and being able to understand that it's not all about you, you know, because I think that's a big piece. You know, if you don't play team sports, I don't think you ever understand, not ever understand, but it's hard to understand the selflessness piece to be able to help for the bigger picture.
Right. Because you're only as strong as your weakest link.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think for a lot of people, when you're, you know, having to do a lot of stuff on your own and you don't have to have, you know, like, for example, if I do something, it doesn't affect Pat. But what if it did? Well, fuck, Pat's going to take everything I do more serious. Mm. So it's like, if you don't have that, you never get that ability to see how that works. So it's tough to manage people or lead people or work with people. So I would say that was a big piece for me that has helped me out today, right? Because I get to use those skills to continue to progress my career. But when it comes to like the visualization piece and like the mindset piece, I still, like I said, I still meditate, visualize. I'm not 100% perfect, right? But I visualize like the life that I want. I visualize like, where am I going? What my future looks like? You know, what house I have, what cars I have, what my family looks like, you know, and not from like a, just a materialistic standpoint, but like, what can I actually feel? Like, if I have all these things, how would I feel? You know, like, am I going to be happy? Because if not, then I'm like, okay, maybe this is not the right goal or vision in mind. So it kind of helps me paint the direction that I want to go and see it before I get there, you know, because it's kind of like with sports, if you don't have those goals set, or if you're not working towards something, you're kind of dead in the water, right? Like, you have no drive. There's no passion. You're just like this floating. Mm-hmm. Life sucks. And I think sports teach you like, oh man, I'm not good with my right foot. Fuck, I got to go out practice. You know, I hit it this way. I got to do it this way. And I think the ability to critically kind of think through issues that you're going through without someone being able to guide you through them is a big piece too.
Well, yeah. And being honest with yourself too, you know, like, yes, you gotta like, yeah, you gotta realize that you suck with that right foot. Mm-hmm. You know, like, I know that I can only take someone down on that side. You know, my sweep single is only good on the left leg. I can't shoot it on that right leg for shit. You know, like, there's stuff that you just got to be honest with yourself on. You
100%.
Know? I mean,
because it's like, when you are, you get to work on them, mm-hmm. right? And then you're 10 times better after that.
Yeah.
So, well, that's the difference between someone that's successful and non-successful, is that they have that ability to be their own critics and be tough on themselves and know those weaknesses and that they need to focus on it, where the other one's just going to make excuses and not do shit about it.
1,000%. So, and I think with that too, it's like, even when you criticize or you're critical of yourself, it's not like you're beating yourself up. Right. And I think that's where athletes are different. Right. Is like, they know the difference of that.
Oh, absolutely.
Right. It's like, not that, oh, I suck completely. I'm terrible. I shouldn't do this. It's like, no, dude, hold on. I'm not good at this. Mm. How can I get better at this?
Right.
Like, it's that simple. And well, go ahead.
I was going to say, I just listened to a podcast recently. There's this guy, he's a baseball coach, but he's funnier than shit on TikTok. He's awesome. Well, they just started his own podcast, and he had, do you guys know who David Justice is?
Mm-mm.
Okay, so he's won some World Series. He was with the Yankees, with the Athletics. He was in Moneyball.
Sick.
Yeah, he was very confident of himself. Mm-hmm. Let's just put it that way. but anyway, he was telling this story about it. He's like how one, it doesn't matter what you did, but how one at bat can change the outcome of a game. And he was just telling the story. He's like, yeah, he's like, listen, I was 0 for 4 with 4 strikeouts in this game. And I was coming up for my 5th at bat in the bottom of the 9th inning, and the game is tied. And he's like, he's like, it's funny because he's like, I went up there and I knew I needed to be aggressive and I needed to jump on the first thing that I thought I could hit. And he's like, I get in the box and the announcer hasn't even finished saying how I'm 0 for 4 with 4 strikeouts and how it's been a struggle for me. And he's like, before I hit a walk-off home run. And mentally, I could have just let those 4 at-bats and those 4 strikeouts completely fuck me up.
Yep.
And I would have been done, and I never would have hit that walk-off home run. But because he's like, it's the past. Mm-hmm. I don't look at the past. I look at the past to help me move forward. He's like, I'm not going to sit here and dwell on the past. I'm like, all right. So each at-bat, each strikeout, yeah, it was bad, but he's like, each strikeout got better and better. And until he's like, but yeah, I used that last one like, hey, fuck this,
mm-hmm.
fuck those 4 strikeouts. I'm good, and I'm gonna. He stepped up and hit a walk-off home run, and it's like it's one at bat can change the outcome of a game. One scenario can change the outcome of your life. One, just whatever, and you can translate that into however you want to translate it. But you can't dwell on the past. You got to move on. And you know, I thought that was. Like listening, like I just listened. It was just yesterday that I was listening to this, and I was
I love that.
Yeah, it was really cool. I'm like, man, how to translate that. And, you know, because I coach a 16U team, and I'm like constantly, I'm like, guys, listen to this.
Yep.
You know, and you know, it's tough, you know, especially young age, but
absolutely
as you get older, that's the biggest thing. If you want to be, and if you want to be successful, you have to have a short, basically, we always call it a short term memory.
Yep.
Always have to have a short term memory. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I can't tell you, I mean, I've given up so many fucking home runs in my life.
Yeah.
But I don't remember any of them.
Well, what I automatically think about there is like, you know, you could apply it to sports, you could apply it to business, but like, it's about building momentum.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, 'cause that one at bat just changed, you know, and then he goes into that next game, you know, I'm feeling good, you know, right. And then that, and I know that's a huge thing in baseball, right? I mean, it's a huge thing in, I mean, everything. I see it in my business, especially.
It's all
like,
about it's confidence.
Confidence and, building that
good,
momentum.
Feel good, play good.
That's
yeah,
it.
Yeah, 100%. True. It's so true. Oh, it is for sure. You got to feel confident about yourself and, you know, building that momentum, you know, with business, especially. That's one thing I've, absolutely. You know, with real estate, you know, like, man, once, you know, you start getting busier, you just seem to find more business. Mm-hmm. You know, at least that's how it's happened for me. You know,
funny how it works, right?
Yeah. It's great.
Well, and I think that's why they say like getting into this business is so tough, because it does. It takes time.
It does.
You know, to build it up and build that momentum. And you know, the ones that stick it out are the ones, you know, they say, what, 2 years, 3 years?
Yeah.
2 or 3 years before you quit on this, because it's going to take.
Yeah, it's like 80% of real estate agents like quit in their first 2 or 3 years. Yeah. It's 2 or 3. I can't remember. Yeah. But yeah, it's like 80% of them.
Yeah, same on my side. Now it's like, I'm not going to be another statistic.
Yeah.
I'm not a statistic. And not to mention, like when I got hired on at Cornerstone, you know, they had a rule like you had to have, you know, 5 years of experience or close so much in business and before they would hire you. Luckily, my business partner now and my mom, who's convinced the guy to take a chance on me, but they're just like, all right, well, no, that's fine, but we're going to put a goal on him. Like, he needs to be producing this much in a year. And I was like, fuck yeah, I like that.
Yeah, like, yeah. I got a number to hit.
Yeah,
you know?
Right. Yep. But at the same time, it's like, I'm going to fucking beat that.
Yeah.
So I did it in 6. I was like, you know, I had 12 months, but like, fuck that, I'm going to do it in 6.
I'm going to double your number.
Yeah.
Right. So
I love that. Yeah. I think a lot of it happens, man, is because we're so focused on the result and not the input.
Right.
Right. Because it's like a lot of the result you can't ever control.
No.
You know what I mean? And that's the hard part, is because we identify ourselves with the result. Right. It's like, oh, if I don't sell this house or if I don't hit this ball, I'm not good.
Right.
Right.
No, like, it's a process.
Bro, 100%.
Process.
It's funny that you even talked about that podcast you listened to, because I just saw something funny enough. I opened up Threads on Instagram for the first time, like ever. Mm-hmm. And there was one thing. It was like, so it was going through like artists. It was like Drake, Beyonce, Red Hot Chili Peppers. And it was, you know, 133 songs, 38 hits, 33%. Then Beyonce was like 98 songs, 24 hits, 20%. And then Red Hot Chili Peppers was like 140, 12 hits, 4%. And it's one of those things where it's like, we see all this, oh my God, look at all the glory, look at all their what they're doing. It's like, bro, you forgot that they shot 100 times before they hit one.
Right.
Yeah. You know, and we do that too. It's like, even with, trying to think of his name, a real estate investor.
Grant Cardone?
No, older guy. Lives in a same house that he still lives in.
Oh, Warren Buffett.
Warren Buffett.
Yes.
Yeah.
Warren Buffett. Dude, he's a great example of this, because when we talk about him, we talk about the success. But if you look at all the investments that he's had that didn't go well, that he's shot, terrible, right? The reason he got all that money was like off of 4 investments. But he did 100 plus to get to those 4. And I think to the points that we're talking about, it's like, dude, you can't worry about the result too much. Right. Like, focus on it, right? Aim for it. But if your input is there and it matches, give it time.
Well, it's like in Atomic Habits. James Clear talks about it, like we've talked about that multiple times. Actually,
that was our first book. Then when we said we did the book club every month, that was our first book.
And so, you know, he was talking about how there was a school that did an experiment, like a photography class, where it was like, hey, this group gets to take as many photos as they want, and then they get to submit their one picture, and then this one can only like take. They can only take one picture or whatever.
One picture the whole semester. Yeah.
One perfect picture.
Yep.
And it's like, who had the better picture? The ones that took thousands of pictures.
Yeah, because, with all the reps.
Yeah, all the reps. You know, that's the thing. You're going to fail. It's you can't be afraid of failure.
1,000%.
You know, that's the one thing is, like, I was never, I'm not afraid to fail.
Mm-hmm.
I'm afraid to quit.
For sure.
That's different.
For sure.
Way different.
I'm afraid to quit something, but afraid to fail. You can't be successful if you're afraid to fail. There's no way that you can be successful if you're afraid to fail, because you're not going to take the chances that you need to take to be successful.
You guys think it's one of those things where society has impacted that word failure so much that people are looking at it as like this, it's like, oh my God, I failed. It's like, that's okay. Yeah, you know what I mean?
Yeah, because like they give you an F in school, you know, like, an, ooh, it's an F, it's a failure.
Right.
Like, ooh, yeah, that's, I feel like that should be changed.
Well, yeah, but I feel like, honestly, with the way things are going, it's almost like they want that, you know? We're not
1,000%.
We're not teaching kids to be winners anymore. You know, and again, another great thing that I, article that I read, and I read, I've read it a few times, but there was this old baseball coach and at the American Baseball Conference in Nashville. And this was back in the early 90s that he did this, but he was like this well-renowned coach. And like everybody would say, like, I paid my ticket just to see him talk. I didn't give a shit about it. If I didn't see any other thing, I just want to pay my money just to see this guy talk. Well, one of his last speeches, he went out there and he was like 78 years old. And he was talking about how, and he walked out with a home plate tied on a string around his neck. And he went and did his whole speech and did all this. And then he was going around and he was just like, all right, I get it. You guys are curious why I'm wearing a home plate around my neck. And he just started going around. He's like, all right, little league coaches, how wide is the home plate? 17 inches. Cool. High school guys, how wide is home plate? 17 inches. College, pro, all 17 inches. And then so like he used the analogy. He's like, okay, it's 17 inches. If a kid goes out and isn't throwing strikes, or in pro ball isn't throwing strikes, you're not going to move them down and ask them to make home plate wider to help them throw strikes, right? The home plate is 17 inches. You're going to work with this kid to teach him to throw within the 17 inches. So as a society, like if you've got a kid that shows up and you have a no facial hair rule and he's your best player and he has facial hair, are you going to widen the plate for him and allow him to have facial hair? He's like, well, that's the problem with society today. He's like, you've got schools that are widening the plate to help people pass. What is it? What we talked about it the other day, an A now is like 85% to 100%.
Equity.
A B is 70 to 84.99%. A C, F is like, so a F is like 40% or below.
Wow.
To get an F. A D is 41 to like 55 or 60. Yeah, it's insane. Crazy. But it's like, that's the thing. He's like, we are letting other people widen the plate to make life easier. There's a reason home plate is 17 inches. He's like, so don't widen the plate. That's his thing. He's like, we've done it for our government by letting them get controlled by outside groups. We've done it to, you know, in jobs. We've let people, you know, do that. Like, but don't widen the plate. And I was like, that was like, it was one of the coolest things that I read.
Great.
That's powerful.
But it's right. It's true. It's like, don't widen the plate. Like, hey, we're not making excuses. We're not making it easier for everybody. Like, and he's just like, yeah. So he's like, when you're coaching or you're a leader, don't widen the plate, make them better by forcing them to stay within the 17 inches. And I was just like, damn, that's fucking awesome.
Damn.
That's really good. Yeah. That's powerful.
Yeah. So, but again, it just goes back to everything that we've been talking about is, you know, the ones that are successful are the ones that want to fit into that 17 inches.
Yep.
They want to figure out how to get that 17 inches. Don't make it easier for me. So, yeah. But
yeah, dude, I think you hit that on the head. Yeah. I do think that's the biggest thing that we're struggling with.
It's like, terrible. It's terrible. They're just making like they're making it so easy for kids now that no one knows how to work hard or be successful. And that's a huge issue. Like, I'm tough as shit on my kids.
I love that.
Hard as shit. I want them. I always tell them, I want you to grow up to be exceptional men. So that starts now. And that starts with respect. It starts with discipline. It starts with everything. And we're doing it now. And people are going to look at me and see the way I talk to my kids and think I'm fucking crazy. But I'm like, okay, well, my kids are out doing what they're doing and your kids out here with their thumb up their butt, picking their nose in the sand at, 15 years old. Like, hey.
Who did it right?
Right, exactly. Yeah. You know, I'm not widening the plate.
I was going to say, I think we move the plate because it's easier for the parents, it's easier for the teachers, it's easier for the government, right?
Yeah.
Because it's hard. Like, and maybe it could be taken from like the aspect of like care, right? Where it's like, oh man, I feel bad, you know, having my son feel or, you know, miss this or whatever. And it's like, dude, what you're doing is actually doing the opposite.
Right.
It's like, it's okay if he does and let him.
Right.
Like,
let him fail.
100%.
Let him fucking fail.
And I think it's all us, dude. Yeah. You know, it's like we take it, it's selfish, but we don't see it as selfish because it's like, oh, I'm doing it for them. It's like, dude, you're actually
hurting him.
1,000%.
Yeah. Hurting him. Just trying to be nice, but it's not. It's not nice.
Don't be nice. Be good.
Yeah. Right.
Yes.
Yeah.
There's a difference.
Actually, I want to mention that real quick. This is something that's been sitting with me for a minute. But like, you are, I think, the definition of good, not nice.
I appreciate that.
And this is something that's always stuck with me about you specifically, is that we talked about like how industrious, like as a culture, Bosnians are, which I agree. It's the most blue collar, hardworking, elbow grease people I've ever had, like the pleasure of calling St. Louisans, especially.
Right.
This man left such an impression on me from the minute I touched down at First Form. This is like August 2019. We're nearing up on like 5 years of being in each other's lives.
So that's
first
crazy.
Form, very grateful.
Likewise.
This man would walk through the whole ass warehouse. We had 80 people in that motherfucker. He would individually greet each and every single person by fucking name. Say, hey, we're going to have a great day today. You never kissed ass. Mm-hmm. You never puffed anyone up or fluffed anybody. That was the leadership you were like role you took before it was even like a thing, before it was even about moving up into a salaried position. And also I believe that's why whenever the pandemic hit and like, hey, the pressure was on, there's a reason you got moved the way that you did and you killed it in customer service. In life, you have the option to either like appear good or to be good. Nice people will still finish last. Good people have that grit to them. A lot of that killer instinct that like Tim Grover talks about in Relentless and Winning. But they know how to control it instead of letting it control them.
100%.
I don't know if there is a better example from my peer group than this human being right here. That's why I call you the GOAT.
You're too kind, brother.
I'm honest.
Fucking kind.
I'm honest.
My man, I appreciate that.
Yeah.
Actually, great point. Dude, I think about this with just us even talking about this. I think there's a difference, right, from like, you know, adjusting the plate, so to say. And for me, the way I've always looked at it is like, okay, the plate stays the same. But what's my attitude towards it?
Right.
You know what I mean? And I essentially, that's what it was. It was like, okay, I'm not changing shit because the work's got to get done. But I could have a bad attitude about it. I could be pissed off. I can still get it done. Or I could come in with a positive mindset, happy, have fun doing it. It's like, how do I make that thing that's hard, that's going to get done regardless? How do I make that more enjoyable? You know, and that's always kind of been my mindset, you know? And like part of the reason I even did that back in the day was like, dude, I know the warehouse is fucking hard. I know any job that people do is tough. And it's like, sometimes you just need a little bit of encouragement, not like, hey, let me make it easier for you. It's like, nah, dude, you fucking got this. Yeah. People need to know that they're powerful, not that, hey, let's make this easier. Because there's a big difference in my mind. Yeah. And so that's kind of the approach I took. And appreciate that, Murph, my man.
Yeah.
So,
gotcha, bro.
Awesome.
Oh, yeah. No, my business coach calls it stress testing my team. Like, hey, every so often, stress test them to see what more they can take on. And he's like, do it in a way that encourages them to embrace and accept the change and the challenge. And he's like, if you can do it right, you'd be amazed at what they will do and put on in the work that they'll take on for you.
1,000%. Dude, no one wants to fail.
No.
But people want to do good.
Yeah.
And I think inherently we automatically think it's like, oh, this dude's trying to sneak by or do this. It's like, bro, what if he just doesn't understand?
Right.
You know, like, have you had a conversation with him?
Right.
Have you communicated this? Have you explained? Have you set these expectations? Have you done these things? Because if you haven't, you can't blame anyone but yourself. And to your point, that's how I look at that too. You know, it's like, dude, it's just taking that extra step to be like, hey, man, how do I help you get through this? And you got to know where my intent is and know that I'm not doing this because I want you to just work more. You know, there's people can feel intent, you know, and I think you could always see where the person that is just trying to get something out of you compared to the person that is trying to make you better. Mm. You know, like even with you being hard on your kids, it's like, hey, okay, first they might not like you in the moment, but it's like 10 years from now, they're gonna be like, dude, my dad was fucking awesome.
Right.
It's like, I wouldn't trade him for the world. You know, and that you're going to do the same exact thing.
100%.
Dude.
Yeah.
And but that is what I think will create the change that we need in this world is those type of kids.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, hey, we can't change everything.
Right.
You know, and there's a quote. I don't know exactly how the quote goes, but it's essentially this guy that wants to change the world, you know, and because he couldn't change the world, he tried to change his family or he tried to change his community, couldn't change the community. So he tried to change his family, couldn't change that. So he's like, all right, I got to change myself. And when he changed himself, he changed his family. He changed his family, changed his community. Community world. And it's you got to start so simple. You know, it's like starts with us. Starts with our kids.
Lead by example.
That's it,
you know.
Dude.
Lead by example.
Lead from the front.
Yep. We need more people that do that. So,
I agree.
Yeah, so talk to us now. Okay, so we got soccer and you were at First Form and where did the trick shots come from? What did you just one day you're just goofing around at headquarters and just start trying this stuff? So talk to us about that.
Good question, dude. So it was funny. It was right at the time I started working at First Form, and it was that transition from like, hey, do pro soccer player to hey, go career, right? And it was sitting there, and at that time I was still training 3-4 times a day. And there was one time I just kind of started messing around with the ball, just doing little juggling stuff. And then I was like, I'm going to try this just trick. And I was like, there's a basketball hoop, because I did all my stuff in a basketball court, right? Like at Webster, there wasn't like, you know, available fields all the time. And nowadays, like high schools close their fields. So to get out there and have a goal open, dude, it's like impossible. Mm. So I just went to the gym and doing all my stuff in the gym. One day I was just like, let me just mess around with some things. And I did this trick and I hit it on the first shot. And in my mind, I was like, it's like, what if I did this full time? And bro, the funny part is I didn't even touch or try to do a soccer trick or trick shots for like another 2 years after that point. Mm. And I didn't even know what I did was planting a seed in my head. Because at the time it was like, hey, I want soccer to be a part of my life, but I didn't know how with the career that I'm going down, right? I'm like, can I do that? How would it look? Is that really what I want to do? And then trick shots was like the combination of both, you know, where it was like, hey, I could be entertaining. I could still educate people with mindset doing all these things. But I was like, the entertaining in me is soccer. And I was like, how do I put those together? And how do I do something that's challenging, that's different, that's unique, but also something where it's like I constantly have to battle with myself? So I was like, trick shots. And it came from that one moment. And so I was like, all right, started with something simple, hit it. And I was like, okay, this is cool. Maybe go a little bit tougher trick shot. And then it just kind of escalated and elevated. And I was like, I'm just try some crazy shit. So from that one moment is literally where it all started. Because I always had it in the back of my head, but I never took action on it. Until just one day out of fucking nowhere, it was just like, hey, do this. And I did it. And I was like, oh, people like this. This is kind of cool. I like this.
Yeah.
And then it continued on from that point, man. So, yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Crazy.
So cool.
And how much shit does Sal give you at headquarters for soccer?
A lot. That man can vouch for that.
There's like 5 people that at any given time Sal will fire on. And usually he gives Dino his props, but if there's one thing he will just bite at your ankles for, it's soccer.
Is it just soccer in general?
You know, because, you know, real sport, baseball. You know, that's just all it is.
That's how it works. Funny enough, that dude loves soccer. I know it. He's fucking...
He just wanted to
admit it. I know it. But then, say it one day.
And then there's Chaz.
Yep.
Like, he goes at Chaz so hard.
Being short.
Yeah. Oh, my God, dude. Like, we were at the banquet 2023 last year. He goes, look out, see all your beautiful faces. Still can't fucking find Chaz anywhere. You could tell, like, Salad had a couple... Yeah.
Yeah. So funny.
And he's fucking looking at Will and Doris, be like, good to see we're you know, following the no employee rush thing.
Yeah.
Dude, at those banquets, he goes off, dog.
Oh,
it's
my
like
God.
It's like a company roast. Yeah, that's exactly it.
Dude, I say this all the time. It's like, Andy and Sal will both make you laugh, but like, as far as like, whose shit talk will put you on, Sal. Like, Andy will tell you a joke, and it'll be a joke. Yep. Sal will tell you something and have you questioning every decision you ever made in your fucking life.
Dude, I think it's a baseball thing.
It absolutely
is. I really do. I think it's just like, you guys have that type of like a style of just like, you know what to say.
Past coach was like, hey, you're fat. Go fucking fix it right now.
Yeah.
And that makes sense.
Yeah.
It was just straight. And you talked about it on the podcast.
Yeah. Straight up. Yeah. I mean, he was my pitching coach from the time I was 10 until I retired. And now he's like my older brother. And he just got inducted into the Greater St. Louis Baseball Amateur Hall of Fame.
That's awesome.
And yeah, I mean, I was a sophomore in high school, and he saw something in me, and I knew what I wanted, and you know, and he encouraged me, but like I was having lower back issues, and he goes, yeah, it's because you're a fat fuck. Go lose some weight.
Straightforward, direct is
just
good.
Just straight to like, now
it wasn't nice.
Now I don't know if he's gonna go talk to every kid that way. Sure. But we had a very special relationship in terms of, I mean, like I was in there every day.
Mm-hmm.
Like you were talking about, like it became a passion, and I mean I was in there every day. Any chance I could go there, I was driving up there, I was focused, and that's what I wanted. And him and I just, like I said, he's like my older brother. So obviously he can talk to me in that way. I don't, like I said, I don't know if he talks to all, I know he's, he's very direct with his kids, but I don't know if he's going to sit there and go calling these kids a fat fuck. For me, like, yeah, he was just like straight up, dude, you're fucking fat. Go work out. Quit fucking eating Jack in the Box. Quit fucking drinking. I know you're drinking. Stop fucking drinking. I'm like,
but dude, it's also the relationship you guys had.
Yeah, I did. But that was that. I think that was the punch in the face that I needed to be like, fuck.
You're right.
You're right. Someone, for the first time, somebody was fucking honest with me. You know, you got your doctors that are like, oh, yeah, you know, it just looks like, you know, like, Come on.
I hate doctors.
Right, doctors. Yeah, same. You know, why aren't you the one telling me I'm a fat fuck? You
know, like, the doctor's probably a fat fuck.
Right.
Honestly.
You won't even see the doctor after that. You know what I mean? It's like, bro, I'm never going to see you again. Just tell me the truth.
Right.
You know what I mean?
For sure.
But yeah, so he was just straight up. And after that, like, I was like, I think this was my sophomore year. I was sitting right around 230 pounds and not good 230. And by the time I graduated high school, I was 195 pounds and in the best shape of my life and as strong as could be. And yeah, I mean, like I said, sometimes that's the shit you need. Mm. And obviously there's ways to deliver it, but he knew that I could take it. And, but yeah, that straight and direct right to it. Baseball players. They don't cut teeth here, man. They're going to tell you like it is.
It makes sense.
Yeah, for sure.
But dude, honestly, I think that's the best way to do it. Oh, yeah. Now, to your point too, it's like, yeah, the approach sometimes, you know, with certain people different, but once you know your players, it's like, you got to know what hits them.
Right.
You know, and you got to pull that out of them because if that person doesn't do that to you, it's pat every year.
Right. But that's how it is in anything. Like, especially you in your leadership role. I mean, everyone that's underneath you is a different personality. So you have to know how to talk to them. Same thing with guys on my team. I got to know how to talk to them.
Yeah.
And the players, I mean, I'm coaching 16 new kids. I mean, their personalities change day to day, hour to hour.
Yes.
Right. You know, like I got to know, like, okay, I got to assess how he is right in that moment so I can know how to talk to him because 10 minutes later, it could be a completely different kid. Like, at one point, I'd be like, yeah, you're fat fuck, go get drunk and rest. And the next one, I could be like, all right, man, got to talk to you about this. We got to get you in the weight room. We got to get you stronger. Okay, that's why you're having problems with your lower back.
Let's lay off the French fries.
Yeah, right. You know, it's just like it's so crazy. Oh god, those fucking kids, man. Their emotions and attitudes and everything changes. Like I'm gonna be well prepared.
Yeah.
By the time
I'm sure. Yeah. Age.
So,
do you think society has a thing to do with that? Because like I think about like
absolutely.
It's like, dude, back in the day, it's like, yeah, we were emotional as kids, but it's like you don't show that like that. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like it was kind of like you don't talk about your feelings like that. You know, you're like, oh, I didn't like the way you did that. But it wasn't like, oh, man, he made me feel so bad. I don't want to go to practice anymore. It's like, I think society's played a role in why that
100%. Now, on the flip side, I think there's some good to that. Yes. I think being able to express emotions and understand your emotions are huge.
Yes.
But not taking offense to them. I think that's where society is kind of like, oh, well, you're feeling hurt or sad. Well, let's coddle you.
Yes.
Yep.
That's where the problem is. 100%. It's not like, all right, let's sit here and understand our emotions.
Right.
And then let's learn how to get better from this. Like, let's use our emotions to understand why it is the way we're feeling this way. Mm-hmm. And then we can improve from there. I mean, that was like the greatest, like a therapy for me. I mean, I go every 2 weeks and that's the thing. It's just like, and it allows me to express emotions and he's asking questions to help move forward from it. So I can understand the emotions, which for baseball, I was always pretty good at being able to understand the emotions.
Mm-hmm.
Now getting into the real world, like sports emotions and real world emotions are completely different and handling them is completely different.
Mm-hmm.
So that's really now it's learning how to understand those real world emotions and controlling those and going from there and how to make you better in that sense. But yeah, I think society today coddles too much and is wanting to, oh no, you're hurt. Your feelings are hurt. Well, you know, let's come here. You don't have to do this anymore. Yep. Like, no. Okay. Your feelings are hurt. Why are your feelings hurt? Okay. Let's talk about it.
Yes.
And then, let's be better the next time, you know? And it's too fucking coddled.
Yeah. And I mean, it's okay to feel bad sometimes.
Yeah,
we don't have to be happy 100% of the time. It's okay to feel down or feel upset or feel like we're not supposed to be happy all the time.
No,
there's no way. Like
there has to be a contrast.
100%. Yeah. There has to be
So here's exactly. So how are you supposed to know what happy is if you don't know what sad is?
100%.
You know?
It's like go somewhere where like go up to like Seattle where it just or somewhere where it just rains all the time, you know, where it rains for days straight. And then when it finally does get sunny out, you appreciate that sun so much more.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's kind of that same concept.
A big piece of it, too, is we live in a time where idealism is more important than practicality. And that's why we get sold this utopian vision of there can be no crime. There can be no isms. There can be no phobias. Yeah, there absolutely is because humans are imperfect.
Yeah.
We're not We were not born to exclude ourselves from hard shit. And it's a big reason why you walk around with the attitude of gratitude that you do, because you come from a genocidal, war-torn fucking time of your life where your parents had no choice but to get up and work and do it for the good of your future. And now, what do? You walk around happy as shit because you realize, like, hey, I got opportunity here. Things can be hard. It doesn't mean that you're exempt from bad days or 100%. You. You guys got kids. Yeah. I don't want to know. I don't want to know some of the anxieties that you have to deal with quite yet, because I think about just taking care of myself and shit can get dour. But like, I have an option, and I want to touch on this too, because like, man, like, I mean, I came through and talked about my mental health a few months ago, and like, I was fucking down, bro. And I was just going through my phone right now, just looking at like what these last like 4 months have actually been. And it's like, now my life's pretty fucking cool. Mm-hmm. It's not easy.
For sure.
I work hard. I play hard. But like, I can sit here and bitch, or I can go do something about it. And fuck, I've been doing something about it, and something happened about it. So yeah, don't sit there and bitch about your fucking idealistic situation you wish you had. Go fucking make something happen, man.
Go ahead, Zach. I mean, you know, where I think a lot of this comes from is, I mean, this is the only time in history that we've had it this good. You know, like
true.
Most people in America, I mean, more people are too fat than hungry, you know, I mean, we have a lot more problem, and we have very little problems than, I mean, it's the only time in history where people aren't wondering where their next meal is coming from. You know, like we have it so good here that people just kind of make up problems or make things seem like a bigger deal than they are.
That's why you always hear like, oh, first world problems. Like, yeah, for sure. So like, they're not problems. It's really not a problem.
I think like, it's just, yeah. I was going to say, I think a lot of it happens because that is just how our mind's always been from, you know, the start of time, right? Yeah. It's like, you know, as creatures, it's like, hey, problem, what's the solution? Problem, what's the solution? If there's no problem, no, there's the problem. Where's the problem? 100%. You know, and I think we're always trying to find something wrong. And it's kind of like a good and bad, right? Because like, you do want to find things that you can improve on and do better, but it takes over, right? You know, and I think a lot of the reason we struggle with the mental health side is because, you know, it's like once you get into that negative state of emotion or negative thought pattern and it stays there for so long, dude, it transfers into your body.
Oh, yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. And it becomes like this home base. Mm-hmm. And even though you're not feeling comfortable or you're stressed out all the time, the body's like, no, dude, I like this. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's so important to like when we talk about like when you guys say like switch your mindset, like, dude, do things, like stop making excuses for yourself. Like, it is hard. It is going to be harder
so
starting
much
out. But like, if you don't do it, you're never going to unlock that ability to be able to see the world for what it is, be grateful for what you actually have, right? But it's because we're in a constant state of that stress and emotion. It's like, dude, you got to break through it.
Right.
You know, and jiu-jitsu is a great way to do that. That is one of the best ways, because it's like, dude, you challenge yourself uncomfortable in a controlled environment. Bro, you can take on anything.
Man, that's why I always say it's like it's a great way to start your day, because then like nothing I'm gonna do later that day is gonna be harder than that. I had a grown man that's 40 pounds heavier than me on top of me trying to strangle me. Like, that's, you know, it doesn't get much tougher than that. You know, like the rest of my day seems pretty easy. You know, this, you know, we're arguing over a roof that needs to be repaired and who's gonna repair it. Is it gonna be the buyer or the seller? You know, like, that's so much less stressful to me than having someone, you know, on top of me trying to strangle me. And that's that's a whole nother thing, but yeah.
1,000%. But dude, there's people that do stress over what they're going through.
For sure. 100%.
And it takes up so much of their brain that it goes down a negative path because they're so emotional.
Yeah.
And it's like, dude, it's tough.
Well, and I mean, I talked about it on our last episode where, you know, I had something that pissed me off at work, and I was dwelling on it while I had my kids, and I essentially lost about an hour of time with my kids, and I was, you know, it took my youngest son coming up and throwing a basketball in my face
to get me
to snap out of it. But like, I mean, like I look back on it now, and it's like, fuck, like, I can't believe I let that take an hour away from my kids. And yeah, I mean, this job is stressful and shit happens all the time, but like, but going back, like, for me, like I that was it. Like, you were talking about doing hard things first in the morning. So usually doing CrossFit early in the morning and getting that workout done. Like, that was it had been a couple days because my schedule was so jacked up last week that it had been a couple days since I had been to the gym or had done jiu-jitsu. So I felt like I was emotional or mentally weak because I hadn't done anything to, like, it's almost like I have to now. And that's awesome. I love the fact that I have to challenge myself early in the morning to do something physically tough to help prepare me for the rest of the day, because especially when you translate it into something productive like jiu-jitsu or CrossFit, it's just like, I mean, helping me get back into shape and helping me lose weight and become a better person that way. So, I mean, obviously you can let it to go down a destructive path as well, but if you're using it in a way to, as product or as in a productive way to better yourself. Yeah. I mean, it's almost now like I have to start my morning doing something difficult so I can get through the rest of the day and be mentally sharp.
Yeah. I couldn't agree more.
And to your point, like it helps you out with every other area in your life too,
absolutely.
You know, like from health, mental, all right. that stuff. So it's not just like, oh, just doing hard shit.
Right.
It's like, it's actually making me better in multiple right. areas of my life that come together so I can do this better.
Right.
Yeah. And well, it's something that you're also improving on at the same yes. time too. It's like, you look at where, you know, jiu-jitsu is a great example of this, you know, where I look at where I was like 6 years ago when I first stepped on, you know, jiu-jitsu mat for the first time and where I'm at now. And it's just like, it shows you can improve at something, you know, like the first time we did Murph yesterday. The first time I did Murph, I was way worse than, you know, I mean, I probably finished it 15 minutes faster yesterday than I ever did the first time, you know, yep. like it's just, you just see that improvement and that you realize that you can get better no matter what it is, whether yep. it's business, whether it's family, whether it's, you know, whatever you can, it's just shown me that I can improve.
1,000%. 1,000%.
You know? And there's a process to it and it doesn't happen overnight.
Yeah. Process. Oh, yeah. But that's the thing is process is huge. And I think that's where most people fail. Mm-hmm. They don't have the processes or set the processes in place to reach their goals. Like it keeps coming up, instant gratification. Mm. There's no instant gratification to success. Mm-hmm. You know, it takes time. I mean, I didn't become a professional baseball player overnight. I started at 8 years old when I started playing. And then when I finally got into lessons at 10 and then doing lessons every week for pretty much the rest of my life. And, you know, that's the thing is people don't see. They see the success and they see these people at the top and it's not instant. Mm-hmm. And if someone's saying, oh yeah, instant gratification, they're fucking wrong.
1,000%. I think just looking, when you see someone at the finish line, it's so much easier to see like, oh my God, look how he got there. It's possible. Right. And even if you know the length of time it took, we still have this like false preconceived notion of like, oh, it's going to take me less. And it's like, dude, it's like, you know, it takes time, but it's like, you got to commit to it, but it's hard to, right? Because you're telling yourself like, hey, for the next 5 years, this is what I'm going to do. It's like, dude, what can happen in 5 years? I don't know. But to your point, like if you have that outline and know that far ahead, like, hey, if I just keep doing this, it'll work out. It'll take away all that stress, mm-hmm. you know? So,
yeah.
Yeah. Anything? Dino, you have a podcast as well. Why don't you yep. plug that real quick so people yep. know where they can find you?
So the podcast is actually called The Process of Becoming. You can find it on Spotify.
All right. Awesome. Yep. Very cool. Anything else you want to plug before we let you go?
Not really, bro. Just me. You guys know me. Yeah. That's about it. So
give him a follow on Instagram to see his trick shots. Yeah. And your handle is what?
It's Dino with an extra O _ music.
Okay. Awesome. And we always end it with one more question that we surprise people with.
Let's go.
It's called the Tombstone Game. Ooh. Here lies Dino Musich. What's it say underneath your tombstone?
Yeah. I think if I could create my own, I think it would be something of left the legacy of doing the right thing and making this world a better place. Perfect. Is truthfully what that would be.
Perfect. So, I love that. Awesome.
Hopefully that's
it. Does it. Yeah. That's love good, it. Man.
Awesome, guys. Well, if you're not subscribed already, please hit that subscribe button for us. Comment what you thought below. Hit that like button, and we will see you next time.